All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant from the Philadelphia suburbs, August 14th, 2023. All right, I got to do it. This team has made it impossible to watch. This team has made it where mediocrity is acceptable. Cashman and Boone and all the other guys and girls in the front office for the New York Yankees have told you that it's not about the results, it's about the process, and the postseason, you know, just get there, it's good enough, and we'll kind of go from there. But now here's where the problem comes in for the Yankees. This team is not making the postseason. I've said it, other people have said it, it's clear and obvious that this team is not making the postseason. They blew a chance to win a series against a playoff team in the Miami Marlins yesterday. They take that first game on Friday night. Saturday, they lose. And then yesterday, when they're up 7-2, this team ends up losing the game by a score of 8-7 on a walk-off to the Miami Marlins. The Yankees blew what was definitely a winnable game yesterday, definitely a winnable series if they were able to defeat the Marlins. And honestly, I want to start with this. You can blame my parents for this loss. Why would you blame them? Well, they mushed them when they were up 7-2. They ran out of that stadium down there in downtown Miami so they could make their restaurant reservation to get some good quality Argentinian food in Miami. What's Argentinian food? I don't know. I didn't ask them. I was too busy asking why they left, why they said, oh, the lead's good right now. And they walked out of that stadium, probably like other Yankee fans in the South Florida area did, to either go get some dinner or to beat the traffic back up to the West Palm Beach area where a lot of the New Yorkers live. Because as you know, that's the sixth borough of New York City between West Palm Beach and Miami. So number one, they mushed it. Now, this game really just highlights to show you what I've been saying about Gerrit Cole and Aaron Judge, but we'll talk really about Gerrit Cole here. Cole gives you six innings, he gives you two earned runs, and he gives you a chance to win. And I said this many times, is he paid a lot? Yeah, of course he is, but he's given you quality starts. He's in the discussion for the American League Cy Young, and probably even the favorite, some would say, to go ahead and capture that American League Cy Young. And you can't be wasting starts by this guy when especially your offense is actually clicking, which never happens. So you had the pitching or the starting pitching. You had the hitting, which this team never does. And I know they actually scored some runs in this series, Saturday not included, but Friday and Sunday they went out and scored some runs. You can't waste chances to win ball games like this. And honestly, every time I check this team's record, I assume they're going to be under 500, and somehow they aren't. But I guess when you keep dropping series 2-3, or you split series 1-1 like the Mets, or 2-2 like you did with the Houston Astros, then no, you're not going to end up under 500. They're 2 games over right now. But again, the only series that they have won since the calendar has turned to July has been against the Kansas City Royals. And that team is awful. That team is almost as bad as the Oakland A's. I don't care what the standings in the American League wildcard race say. This is not the first wildcard, not the second wildcard, the third wildcard that we're talking about. I don't care that it's 4 games in the loss column. I don't care that it's against a division rival in the Toronto Blue Jays. This team is not making the playoffs. And if they're not making the playoffs, Brian Cashman, you can't even say that, oh, it's about the process. It's not about the results. The postseason is a crapshoot. Because, again, it's not a crapshoot for the Dodgers. It's not a crapshoot for the Houston Astros. It's not a crapshoot for the Atlanta Braves, teams that at least win around every year, make a World Series, even if they win a pennant, all right? This is insane that I'm saying. If at least you made the World Series and you won a pennant, we wouldn't be complaining. The team hasn't been to a World Series since 2009, and I know that they won that year. And before that, it had been since 03. So you're talking in the past 20, 21 years. If you include this one, you've only been in 2 World Series with a record of 1-1. You've seen your division rivals throughout this time, like the Boston Red Sox, and I know they're not much better than the Yankees right now, but you've seen them run laps around you. You've seen a team like the Houston Astros, who prior to 2017 was an absolutely gutless organization. You've seen them run laps around you. The Kansas City Royals have even been to two more World Series than the Yankees since the start of the 2010s, and they won one of those. Even the Mets have been to a World Series. So at a certain point with this team, it's not about the process, because your process is not even getting you into the playoffs this year, unless it's a miracle. And don't give me – they're only four games back. I know I said that. But – even if they get there, so what? The bats are going to go cold. I've said this before. Even as good as Aaron Judge is, he's not a great postseason hitter. He can't hit his way out of a paper bag in the postseason. He strikes out left and right. And again, it takes his Herculean performances just to even make the playoffs. You know, he's going to need to go on a run in September and the rest of this month where he hits like 450 for the rest of the season and hits like 30 or, you know, 20 plus home runs for this team just to even sniff the postseason. They're not making the playoffs. And honestly, if you're a Yankee fan, the best thing that you can hope for, if they do in fact miss the playoffs, is that the owner upstairs and everyone above Cashman, which is not many people in this organization, but they do have an owner, they do have a Steinbrenner, even if by name only, says, this is not acceptable. Cashman, you're gone. We got to change things up. You've been here since the majority of our fans, you know, who are in their 30s, were walking around in their elementary schools, like yours truly, and realizes that Boone, you know, you've tried your hardest. You were kind of dealt a poor hand this year in terms of the players, but we're going to bring in a new guy to run the team, and we're letting them pick their own manager, and it's nothing personal. We thank you for the work that you've done. We know that you cared about the players. We know that you wanted this team to succeed, but honestly, the team just was not composed in an efficient manner to go ahead and win you World Series. And it's not your fault, but we're making a change because we want the new person we bring in to hire their own manager. And I think Boone, who's been around baseball his whole life, even his grandfather played professional baseball, I think he'd understand that, quite frankly. I think he's almost begging with some of these tirades and the way he gets thrown out of games. And I can't destroy him for doing that, but I think he's begging to get out of there, realize that this is not a situation that really is his fault, even in the slightest, because I, you know, had been one who had blamed Boone for not holding these players accountable for, you know, their performances and, you know, not ripping them through the media because he's really there to be lovey-dovey with the guys, tell them to keep their head up, really be more of a psychologist in the locker room. But this season has made me shift all of the blame to Brian Cashman because this roster's flawed. We've gone over it time after time again. Outside of Aaron Judge, there is nothing in this lineup that scares you. Please don't tell me Gleyber Torres. He's a nice player. He's slightly above major league average. He's a, you know, definitive guy who can be in your lineup. I got no issue with that. I got no issue with what he brings to the field as long as he's playing second base and not shortstop like a few years ago. But he's not any type of big-time hitter. It's on Cashman. He's assembled a flawed team. I've said this before. The IKFs, the Billy McKinneys, the, you know, Jake Bowers of the world. This is not a good team. Cashman's made mistakes. Made mistakes. I can't destroy him again for Stanton. I can't destroy him for LeMayu. I don't want to totally get back into what I talked about last podcast, but it's not working. It's time for a change. And they're going to play the Atlanta Braves in a little series starting tonight. And here's how I know it's time for a change. Here's how I know that Brian Cashman is not running this team effectively. I took a peek at the Braves lineup from yesterday because when I was making my little notes here for the podcast, I didn't want to wait until the lineups came out. So I'm just going to read you their lineup and give you some statistics. I've definitely done some research here. This is not just me ad-libbing here, even in the slightest. Leading off, you got Acuna, who's got 26 homers, 55 steals. He's got a 421 on base percentage and an OPS of almost 1,000. That's your leadoff hitter. He's going to, you know, run away with the MVP award. Next, you've got Albies, who I've never loved from an on-base standpoint necessarily, but he's got 28 home runs. His on-base percentage is not as bad as I thought at 327. That's a darn good number two hitter. and he's got speed too. You got Austin Riley in there, who's got 28 homers. He's got a slugging percentage north of 500. Your cleanup hitter is Olsen, who, if Acuna doesn't exist, this guy wins the NL MVP. He's got 43 home runs. He's slugging north of 600 and has an OPS over 1,000. Then you've got Marcelo Ozuna hitting .500 yesterday. You want to tell me he's a bad guy? Yeah, of course. The guy is a horrible guy. What he, you know, with the incidents off the field, I get it. You want to tell me he's not going to duplicate ever again what he did 2020 in the shortened year? Yeah. You want to tell me he's not the player he was in 2017 with the Miami Marlins? Yeah. But also, he's got 23 home runs this year. Where am I getting that with the Yankees outside of Judge? Nowhere. Eddie Rosario, he's not very good, all right? He's their worst hitter on the team. But then here's where it really starts to bug me, because now we're at the bottom of the lineup here. And we got the catcher, Sean Murphy, who's got 20 home runs out of that catching spot. He's got a .380 on-base percentage. Now, it makes me think, Murphy and Olsen, these guys were bought to Atlanta by trades with the Oakland Athletics, either before the 2022 season in Olsen's case and before 2023 with Murphy. Yankees right now, they have seven current top 100 prospects. I understand I'm going back two off-seasons and one off-season with Murphy and Olsen, but you got to tell me none of those guys were there. Cashman couldn't have traded these prospects. And we all know with the Yankees, most of these prospects never live up to anything. You're telling me he couldn't have traded for Matt Olson and Sean Murphy? I mean, come on. Trade some of the prospects, Cashman, because we know they don't live up. Honestly, even Ozuna, to get back, and we'll finish the rest of the lineup in a second, even Ozuna's got a better contract than Giancarlo Stanton, and that's a guy you could have traded for without absorbing this massive contract. And we didn't think that absorbing the massive contract was going to be an issue because we thought the Yankees had pretty much unlimited money at their disposal and were trying to break out of, at the time, if you go back to December 2017, what was going to be end up being like a nine-year drought of not winning the World Series if they didn't win it in 2018, you know, which was the season preceding where they acquired Giancarlo Stanton. So even Ozuna, who's, you know, not as good as Stanton overall for the most part, definitely not as dominant, but his contracts are better. Maybe Cashman should have brought him in instead if you really were set on bringing in another right-handed power hitter. All right, next you've got Arcia. This guy's a shortstop hitting .290 in the eighth spot. I don't need to see anything else. And then you've got Michael Harris. This is the guy who I loved coming into the year from a fantasy baseball perspective. And, you know, he's shown a little bit of regression due to a little bit of lower batting average on balls in play, not quite hitting the ball out of the park like he did. But he's still hitting .287 with a .335 on-base percentage out of the ninth spot. That would be like a number three hitter for the Yankees. That would be the guy protecting Judge. I mean, come on. This just goes to show you that Cashman has not done a good job of putting together a solid product on the field, and it's not Boone's fault based on these players at his disposal. The Braves right now, they're the best run organization in baseball. I mean, I know the Astros won the World Series last year, but the Braves even let Freddie Freeman walk. What they do, they replace him with a better power hitter with Matt Olson. They let Dansby Swanson walk. That's a guy who's productive this year with the Cubs, leading a little bit of a midseason resurgence for them. Those guys have performed. And again, I bring all of this up to say that Cashman needs to go because Anthopoulos with the Braves, he's doing a much better job. And if there's guys out there, not that Anthopoulos would go to the Yankees, there's guys that are doing a better job than Cashman. It's your job to find someone to step into that role because what Cashman is putting out there with this team is not acceptable. And you could say, honestly, that I haven't even touched the pitching, but you could say you could even give the Braves a little bit of bad luck because of what's happened with Soroka. So, I mean, where's the pitchers that Cashman's developed? There's no Max Fried. There's no Spencer Strider. I mean, Atlanta is loaded. If they don't win the World Series, it's going to be a shocker to me. Not only that, they locked up some of these players to extensions, whether it be Riley, whether it be Albies, whether it be Acuna. So he's got these players under control. Cashman was never able to do that with Judge. He was never able to lock him in, and they're paying for it. I'm not saying Judge is not worth it because he is an all-world player. He is a Hall of Fame and above-level talent. He is a guy who can have over 1,000 OPS for a season, which is where you want to be for your truly elite players. But Cashman, if you compare him to Alex Anthopoulos, is simply not doing a good enough job, and that's why he needs to be gone at the end of the season. All right, now, I won't even look at the Yankees lineup compared to this, but I'll tell you this. You've got IKF yesterday in the lineup. You've got Bowers. You've got McKinney. And the reason that those guys are playing is because, again, Cashman has made horrendous signings, and quite frankly has just been absolutely delusional in several situations, including going back to Gary Sanchez when he should have realized that Sanchez didn't have it anymore, and he peaked after 2017. And it doesn't take a genius. And people, you know, laud Cashman for his amazing free agent signings, kind of dipping into the bargain barrel bin. DJ LeMahieu prior to 2019, that's, you know, one case in point there. Throughout the years, he's brought in guys. I always go back to 05 with Sean Chacon and Aaron Small, helped, you know, revolutionize the team, calling up Cano at the right time, bringing up Chin-Ming Wang at the right time. I go back to years like that where they kind of clawed to get in the playoffs. And even putting together teams in 2013 and 2014 that were bad, but they still were able to win 83, 84 games. But again, it doesn't take a genius to sign Gerrit Cole with basically a blank check. And I give them all the credit in the world for Judge. I've said that before. They've developed him. They drafted him. They found him. All the credit there. But you got to have more in the cupboard as far as developing players outside of Robinson Cano, Brett Gardner, and Aaron Judge. And Aaron Judge is amazing. But you got to have more players. Because guys like Clint Frazier, guys like Greg Bird, guys like Gary Sanchez, they all flopped massively when we thought that these were going to be players to carry the team. And it won't surprise me if guys like Esteban Florial was killing in a AAA. He'll never make any significant impact on the Major League. I know he's been up before. Won't surprise me if guys like Jason Dominguez, who was once this highly touted prospect, and I still think he is, if you look at that top 100 list, wouldn't surprise me if he does absolutely nothing on the Major League level for the Yankees, because I can go back and I can pick players that have just absolutely flopped who they've either drafted or made trades for to develop. I mean, Jesus Montero, that guy was out of baseball real quick when they swapped him for Pineda. It wasn't entirely his fault once he was on the Mariners, but you get my drift. Cashman needs to go. It's time to bring someone else new here. All right, another Yankee topic here. And I mean, who would thought I'm ranting about a team that with, 50 or 60 games left, they're two games over 500, but they're going to take up a big segment here. They're honoring the 1998 team for Old Timers Day on September 9th. I was looking at the roster that they're going to have out there as far as the people who are coming back, and you can find this on the Yankees Twitter if you don't believe me. Half of those guys, or maybe not half, but a lot of them I never heard of. I watched every game in 1998. I was diehard into the New York Yankees then. It's really, you know, my fondest of memories. I remember opening day of 1998. I think the Yankees were out there on the West Coast. And they dropped games to the Oakland A's. They started out real cold. They came back and they won the 114 games. I can break down the playoffs in 1998. I can tell you all about where I was even when Tino Martinez hit that game one grand slam in the 98 World Series. So with that in mind, I mean, I'm looking through the guys that they're bringing back. There's a guy that they're bringing back by the name of Jay Tesmer. And I'm saying to myself, who in the world is Jay Tesmer? Looked him up on the Handy Baseball Reference. 7 games and a 3.12 ERA for the 98 Yankees. Really? We're all going to flood the ballpark for him? So then I looked at some of these other guys, and I came across another relief pitcher by the name of Mike Germanizak. This Mike Germanizak appeared in 3 games and had a 12 ERA and never made another MLB appearance ever again. Listen, I get that for 3 games he was a major leaguer, and that's 3 more games than I'll ever be. But really, we need to bring back these guys. We need to give them their, you know, moment in the sun. This is the 98 Yankees we're talking about. If we're honoring the 98 Yankees, I got to have Brosius there. I got to have Derek Jeter there, and he'll be there. Of course, I got to have Bernie. I got to have Tino. I got to have Pettit. And these guys will all be there. But there's no reason to bring back Mike Germanizak. There's no reason to bring back Jay Tesmer. These sound like fake names, creative players. So then I continued to look. Mike Figga will be there. Who's Mike Figga? He appeared in 1 game for the 98 Yankees. What are you doing, Yankees? Why are you – no offense to these 3 gentlemen personally, but why are you inviting them? Who cares about them? unnecessary. I mean, do you think Jeter even remembers these three guys? You think Jorge Posada remembers these three guys? You think Bernie and Tino? You think Willie Randolph, who was a coach on that 98 Yankees team, remembers them? I don't think so. So when I catch the recording of it, either on YouTube or on the MLB TV app, whatever it is, I'll look forward to, as I do pretty much every year, I'll look forward to when they announce Thurman Munson's wife, and I think her name's Diane, and Bobby Mercer's wife, Kay, who I look for each and every single year. Because even though I never saw Thurman Munson play, obviously he passed away in 79, that tragic plane accident, I could tell you all about Thurman Munson, where he was from in Ohio. I could tell you he won Rookie of the Year. I could tell you he really, you know, led the Yankee turnaround that led them into the 1976 World Series. So I can break that down. And Bobby Mercer, he was an announcer for the Yankees, so I know all about him. I read a book about Bobby Mercer, another guy from Oklahoma, just like Mickey Mantle, who's supposed to kind of be the next Mickey Mantle, so to speak. And he was a little bit of a flop. He had two tenures with the Yankees. So the point is, I look for those two ladies every year because their husbands are no longer with us here on the earth. But if you're someone like me who's read every little detail that they can about the New York Yankees because they love the history of baseball, the history of this organization, you know, I look forward to looking for them on the TV each and every year. All right, now, Jim Harbaugh. We're totally switching. Jim Harbaugh, who, you know, I guess if we're going to link this, Harbaugh played at Michigan, is now the coach of Michigan, where Derek Jeter went to college. So there's your little link there. All right, essentially, Harbaugh, well, let's break this down for you. He was suspended, if you didn't know, for lying about buying a cheeseburger, except he won't agree, and the NCAA, won't agree to the punishment outside of their little kangaroo court there, because the NCAA wants more of a strict punishment. And I'm not necessarily for buying the cheeseburger to these recruits, but for the lying about it, because the NCAA places a high value in coming forward and telling the truth. And honestly, what's bothering me about this is I'm not a Michigan fan. I like Michigan basketball for some reason. I've always been drawn to watching them. But I don't care for Michigan football. I got an uncle that went to Ohio State anyway. Why does the NCAA insist on pretending they're anything more than an organization that puts together bowl games, puts together a pretty solid college football playoff, especially one that's going to be expanding, and puts together some other solid events like the NCAA tournament to be one, but also the College World Series and the Softball World Series? Those are events that people, you know, like to go to and they care about. And I understand there's other sports too. But no one who's a college football fan, no one cares about what Harbaugh did. No one cares that he lied to the NCAA. No one places any validity in what the NCAA has done historically in holding back players from getting theirs, you know, with their name, image, and likeness, holding them back from being able to be properly nourished at times. If you think back to that UConn team, I think in 2014 with Shabazz Napier, and, you know, being worried about if he was putting too much cream cheese on a bagel because that might constitute a meal instead of a snack. The point is, no one takes these silly rules into any type of seriousness. I bet if you even asked other Big Ten coaches like Ryan Day at Ohio State, like, I don't even know, Franklin at Penn State, no one would be up in arms. This is not some type of major violation. And they're just coming down hard on him because he lied to them. These rules are archaic. The fact that the NCAA was not okay with settling at four games, because Harbaugh was like, I'll just sit out four games if you leave me alone. I'll give up, you know, probably $1 million, if not more, for those four games. And the NCAA kept pushing for more, all because he bought recruits cheeseburgers and then he lied about it. NCAA needs to get out of the moralist business. Okay, they need to join the reality that they are part of the capitalism world. We can all see it, those of us who are not involved, those of us who are fans, those of us who are, you know, alum of these big-time Power Five schools. It's never been made more true to us since now you're going to have UCLA and USC traveling possibly all the way across the country diagonally to New Jersey to play Rutgers in sports like rowing or swimming or gymnastics, where these are incredible athletes, don't get me wrong, don't take it the wrong way, but these are non-revenue sports based on the fact that to fund these sports. They needed the football to have the big time television deals, which led to the Big Ten going out and poaching UCLA and USC. So, I mean, get out of the moralist business, NCAA. You have no reason enforcing this. You have no reason going after Harbaugh for anything more than one scholarship. If you want to just say, all right, the rules are the rules, GM, we got to do something. I'm going to take away one scholarship for you for the next year. I think Harbaugh would be okay with that. He was okay with four games, so why wouldn't he be okay with that? This is just archaic. And you've heard all these reports of Harbaugh now maybe might put some feelers back out for the NFL. This is a guy who was a successful NFL coach. The worst he ever was in the NFL was 8-8. Those 49ers teams, those teams would try to beat you into submission. How do I know? Because I remember that 2011 NFC Championship game. Eli Manning got his face pounded. Eli Manning took an absolute beating that game and came out victorious thanks to Kyle Williams fumbling a punt and the Giants falling on it in overtime. Those Harbaugh teams were tough. So that guy can go right back into the NFL if he wants to. And he's not accepting this suspension, which means that the NCAA are going to take him after this year to their real, quote-unquote, court, in which they'll try to, you know, levy a stronger suspension than four games, even though four games was about as ridiculous as can be. All right, now, next segment here. So the Harbaugh thing is ridiculous, but here's another note with the NCAA situation. And I heard this on a radio show this week, and I think it was on Mad Dog Sports Radio. I think the reporter, last name Wetzel, Dan Wetzel, I think his name is Wenzel, whatever it is, that's not really so important. We'll give him some credit here. But his idea was that basketball and football need to kind of be in their own little entity from the college standpoint because of the fact that they make all the money and it's okay for football teams to travel once a week, like, you know, University of Washington having to go play Rutgers or Oregon is going to have to go play Maryland, and since they're all going to be in the Big Ten, it's okay for football players to do it, but the amount of money it's just going to take to have these other sports like the gymnastics, like even tennis, to go play cross country, it's just going to be kind of a waste of money. So the idea was that the other sports outside of football, and I'm going to add to this, but outside of football and basketball, really make sure that they are in more regional conferences. So an example would be Penn State and Pitt. Let's put them in the same conference instead of the ACC and the Big Ten. This way, within 2 or 3 hour drive, whatever it is, give or take, maybe I'm off an hour there, maybe it's 4 hours, but you can have swimming and you can have track and you can have gymnastics, and we're keeping teams close by to one another. And we're not even saying, like, go drop down a level for division, because those are both Power Five schools. And even, like, you know, let's say you put Maryland in there. Let's say you put, I don't know, I'm going to expand into D.C. Let's say you put George Washington into there. They have Division One basketball. So, you know, we're kind of staying in the western, quote-unquote, part of the East Coast there. And this way we've got teams that are close by who are not necessarily the same conferences, but we have it where they're going to be competing in these other sports, keeping it local, keeping it to the point, which kind of ties back to what I said about the NCAA, in that these are student athletes. They're not professionals who need to travel all the way across the country for their swimming or gymnastics or diving competitions. Because maybe at the end of the year, you have a national championship and you might go to a big time city like Las Vegas, like Los Angeles, like Denver, whatever the case might be across the country. And that's fine. But if you want to enforce the fact that these students are going to be going, you know, professional in anything but athletics, and a handful of them will make the Olympics, obviously, but now you have it so that they have shorter trips and there needs to be some type of separation. And to add to that, I think that I'm okay with keeping baseball and softball in there, because think about the way that definitely baseball, and I think softball, is set up where you play a series. So you're going to go for three games. You're going to go play, if you're Oregon, you're going to go across the country to play the University of Maryland. You're going to go play Rutgers. You're going to go play Ohio State within the Big Ten. So I think that still works. And because they do have tournaments that bring in some revenue, the College World Series and the College Softball World Series, I'm okay with that. But sports even like tennis and like golf, and I'm a big-time golfer, as you know, get those sports, start them earlier, start them before classes start. I got no issue with that. If it goes into the colder parts of the year, get put on rain gear if it's raining. They do it, you know, in Scotland. They play golf in the winter there. What's the big deal? All right, now, James Harden. This is going to be the last topic we're going to talk about. All right? Look, James Harden, you can, if this would be what I would say if I was talking to him, you can't have control with a max deal and go to a contending team all in one while getting the most amount of money that, you know, ties to the max deal. Think about LeBron James back in 2010. He didn't take a max deal. Him, Bosh, and Wade, they all took like $10 million, which at the time was pretty low. I mean, I think it was like almost half of what Joe Johnson was the highest time, highest paid player at the time was making. But what he did was he went to a contending team. He had control because he wasn't on the longest amount of years, so that he was able to opt out of Miami after the 2013-2014 season. So even if the GM, Daryl Morey's hugging you when you get off the plane arriving here in Philadelphia, you know, you just can't have all that. And he turned down a max extension from the Brooklyn Nets. So if money is what you're so upset about, which I have to think it is, because you could be a free agent, could have been a free agent if you declined your option for this year, and you could still be a free agent after this season. I have to think that getting the max amount of money, James Harden, is what you're upset about. I mean, you got played here. There's no other way to say it. I think that you probably had some type of under-the-table deal with Morey, and that's why you called him a liar. And I honestly agree with you calling him a liar. But here's the thing, is that there's no way of enforcing this. You're not going to go to the NBA Players Association and rat out Daryl Morey because you got no proof of this. Everyone kind of like saw this on the table because they questioned, oh, he's taking less money. That's kind of a surprise. But if you're James Harden, you played yourself. You're not as good as you think you were. The market's not as strong for you. The team's not going to trade you. These teams do not, and I'll repeat, do not need to bend over and do whatever they want or whatever the player wants. They just simply don't need to. So even if Morey made him these promises, and we're not going to have to, you know, go to the Salvation Army here and take out a collection bucket for James Harden. He's still going to make over $35 million here. But this all could have been different if you're James Harden, because in 2018, you blew a 3-2 lead. And I don't want to hear about Chris Paul being out when you were with the Rockets. You blew a 3-2 lead against the Warriors with Durant, with Curry, with Green, with Thompson. And you had them beat. You were up 3-2 with all those guys in their primes. Then you likely win that 2018 title because Cleveland was a bad team. And if you had done that, then to me, I think you would have gotten that max deal now from the Sixers, because at least you would have proved that you could win a title and be definitively 100% the leading guy on that team, you know, winning a title. Because think about it. It's rare that you have one guy who's the definitive head and shoulders guy to win a title. I mean, it's Dirk in 2011. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo in 2021. That's about it. I mean, I know, and LeBron in 2016. But he still had Herculean performances in 2016 from Kyrie. Think about game six. He went for over 40 points also. But if 2018, if they win the title, that Rockets team, no one questions, even though Chris Paul is there, because he was injured. But who knows if he comes back for the finals. So if you had done that, you probably wouldn't be having these issues getting the contract now. You probably wouldn't have to rely on wink-wink agreements with your GM, who gave you a bear hug once you got off the plane here in Philly. You played yourself. The market simply is not there for you for a trading perspective. Could the Knicks bring you in with all the picks they have? Yeah, but I'm not bringing in another guy who needs the ball. That's Jalen Brunson's team. No doubt about that. I don't want him. And I know there's been trade rumors out there that the Knicks are going to bring in Joel Embiid. I don't want him either. I'm not giving up Barrett. I'm not giving up Grimes. I'm not giving up Quickley for a guy that, honestly, every time I watch play, and these rumors have been out there, every time I watch play in Embiid, I'm worried he's going to fall down and injure himself and be out for the season. And he's a heck of a player. He's an exciting player. He can put up big-time numbers, no doubt. But I'm not gutting the team and giving four first-round picks. That market has sailed in terms of giving up all the picks for the star player. If you're, you know, Kevin Durant, who somehow managed to force his way out. And that's probably why Harden thought he could force his way, because he forced his way out of Houston. He forced his way out of the Nets. He saw Durant force his way out of the Nets to the Suns. But Philly's like, you're on an expiring contract. Like, we're not trading you. So you can, you know, say what you want about Morey being a liar. You can be disappointed that you seemingly had the wink-wink deal, but it's done. It's over. If you want to play basketball, it's going to be for the 76ers this year, and then you can figure it out. Go be a free agent. See what your market is. It's not as strong as you think it is, and it definitely is not where it is with when the Nets brought you in and gave up the entire world to get you. All right, Schloss rant, live from the Philadelphia suburbs. Yankees are a disappointment. The NCAA is a joke, and James Harden played himself. That's what we've got here on Monday the 14th. We'll see you later, everyone.